On the line, we have with us Abeyume Azikwe. Abeyume is the editor of the Pan-African Newswire. He always joins us here on CHRY to bring us, I guess, the American foreign policy perspective on African current events. And today he'll be speaking to us about the recent uprising in Burkina Faso, as well as the AFRICOM and U.S. role in training some Burkinabe military. So as you know, this past week, civil society and the opposition government have established a roadmap to have agreed upon a roadmap for the transition of Burkina Faso to civil rule. And now our negotiations are negotiating with the Burkinabe military. And that definitely leaves us to ask, you know, who is this military? What is it composed of? So, Abeyume, thank you so much for joining us once again on Mandela.
Well, thank you for having me.
It's always a pleasure to have your perspective on this show. So I'd like us to maybe just backtrack just a bit. And if you can tell us about the popular uprising that we witnessed in Burkina at the beginning of this month, at the end of last month, that led to the resignation of the 27-year rule of Blaise Compaoré. Of course, Blaise Compaoré coming into power by killing and murdering revolutionary Thomas Sankara. So if you can give us like a short kind of like 30-year history.
Well, yes, as you mentioned, Thomas Sankara was a revolutionary leader that came to power as a result of a national uprising in 1983. He remained in power for 4 years. He was assassinated on October 15th of 1987, and he attempted to build a revolutionary movement to transform the state in Burkina Faso. He wanted to unite with other progressive forces around Africa. And also, he was calling for the cancellation of the international debt to the banks and the financial institutions, which in the 1980s was a major issue on the African continent. So what he was saying had resonance not only in Burkina Faso, but throughout Africa. Then, of course, in 1987, he was overthrown, assassinated. And since that time period, Blaise Compaoré has furthered the dominance of France, and in recent years formed a partnership with the United States Pentagon and the Central Intelligence Agency around the United States Africa Command. Burkina Faso is a landlocked country. Previously, it was largely an agricultural producing and exporting nation. They produced cotton, they produced other agricultural exports. But in recent years, they have been mining for gold, and they have become the fourth largest producer of gold on the African continent. So they are strategically important. They've also served as a rear base for AFRICOM's operations, not only in Burkina Faso, but also in Niger and Mali and other countries in West Africa. So the uprising in Burkina Faso poses a threat to U.S. foreign policy in Africa. So that's why this country is so important. That's why it's so significant. And the military there is actually being bolstered by the Pentagon. So it's a very complex and protracted situation that we are facing right now in the country.
And if you could tell us just briefly about the popular uprising that happened just a couple of weeks ago, but especially how it was a grassroots uprising. We know, if you could tell us a bit about Ballet Citoyen and how kind of these Burkinabe youth had come together in a way to mobilize this kind of uprising in the streets, but and what is the situation now that it is the army, I believe, that is kind of holding on to law and order and power?
The country, although they have been earning a lot of resources from mining in the country, and in fact, there is a Canadian firm, Orezone, which is in fact one of the key players in the mining of gold inside the country. But the money has not gone down to support the people there. People are extremely poor. The unemployment rate, according to some figures, is as high as 77%. So most people are working within the so-called informal sector of the economy. In 2011, the situation got so bad that there were actual food rebellions in the capital and other parts of the country because people didn't have enough food. And then in 2013, they were forced to grant some concessions to the people there. This was just last year. What really was the spark that set off the whole uprising just last month was that Blaise Compaoré, who has been in power for 27 years, who was a colleague of Thomas Sankara, took off his military uniform, put on civilian clothes, and ran for president repeatedly. He wanted to extend his reign by changing the constitution. And they had elements within the parliament which were in the process of attempting to amend the constitution so he could run again for office. And this set off a general strikes and rebellions throughout the country leading up to the crescendo on October the 30th where people gathered at the Plaza de la Nation and at the parliament where they actually blockaded the parliament, overran the security forces, entered the parliament, and even set a portion of it on fire, causing Blaise Compaoré to flee the capital. And the army, rather than risk a popular revolution where the masses would take control of the parliament and the government and totally overrun the security forces and the military, the army itself took control, and they have maintained control. Initially, they had Honoré Traoré as the leader. He was a general. And then they realized that that would not work, so they appointed Isaac Yakuba Zaida, who was the deputy commander of the Presidential Guard regiment there. But the masses are not satisfied with that either. So, as you said, there's negotiations that are going on right now, and the army still does not want to relinquish total control. They still want to maintain some control through the transitional process, which will lead up to an election.
And in a recent article that you wrote that was featured on the Pan-African Newswire, you had dug in further into the military. And as you mentioned in the introduction, Compaoré was a participant in the U.S. Africa Command, AFRICOM, counter-terrorist operations in West Africa. So there's that bit, which I guess is not so surprising. But as you'd mentioned, Lieutenant Colonel Zaida, who is now in power, also has connections to the U.S. Led AFRICOM, but also training by the U.S. military. He's participated in counterterrorism training courses in the States and also in Botswana. So can you tell us a bit about that, about Zaida specifically and about Compaoré's role in AFRICOM?
Yes. Zaida was, of course, trained by the Pentagon in at least two separate courses that trains and orients these African military leaders to in fact serve U.S. foreign policy interests in Africa. And this came out, of course, after he was appointed by the military as the leader, at least interim leader of the government there. And they serve as a rear base for U.S. military operations in these neighboring West African countries. For example, in Mali, the French intervened early in 2013 to ostensibly fight against the Islamist organizations and the Tuareg nationalist groups in the north of Mali. And they have been utilizing Burkina Faso land and airspace as a means of rearming and supplying other materials to the French army. Also, the United States has drone stations in West Africa, in Niger, for example, which is one of the world's largest producers of uranium. The United States is right now building drone stations in Niger as we speak. So Burkina Faso's military is involved in all of this. And although they claim they're fighting terrorism, some of these so-called terrorist groups that they claim they're fighting have also been funded by the United States as well. So we're not confused and we're not misled by these so-called counterterrorism operations in West Africa, because the only thing they're really concerned about is to escalate the mining and exploitation of mineral resources in West Africa, and also to shore up U.S. influence, and to work at the same time in competition as well as in collaboration with France and other NATO countries. So yes, Burkina Faso is a key element in that whole United States anti-terrorism operations. And these operations, in fact, are doing nothing to raise the standard of living or stabilize the political situation throughout West Africa, where there's been more and more unrest due to the lack of these resources that are being garnered from mining. Those resources are not being shared with the majority of the workers, the farmers, and the youth, not only in Burkina Faso, but in Ghana, in Mali, in Niger. There have been unrest in the last several weeks and months. People are demanding their share of this increased profits and increased revenue through the mining industry. So it's a very, very dangerous and a very volatile situation. And the potential for it getting worse is there, because right now we have a decline in commodity prices around the world. A lot of these countries produce oil, they produce agricultural products, other mineral resources that are sold to these Western countries. And as a result of that, when the prices go down for these commodities, it has a tremendous impact on these developing states. They lose foreign exchange, unemployment goes up, resources needed to buy food and other supplies from the West declines. The capacity of them to do that declines. So as a result, they fall into economic crisis. And there's nothing really for them to do except escalate repression against the workers, the farmers, and the youth in these countries in West Africa. So the United States is very concerned about what's going on there. They're encouraging the military to fight, you know, for more authority within this governing transitional council that's being negotiated right now. So they're trying to bow off elements within the opposition, and at the same time, they are not willing to totally relinquish control to a popular government. And of course, it was quite interesting that many of the people out in the streets, particularly the youth, thousands of them were wearing T-shirts with the image of Captain Thomas Sankara. They were also carrying placards, you know, saying things were very complimentary of Thomas Sankara, saying, you know, Sankara, you know, we are your children. We are reclaiming your... made a statement, in fact, right prior to the rebellion, saying that, you know, the image and the legacy of Captain Thomas Sankara lives. So this is what they're very concerned about. They do not want a revolutionary movement that's largely led by youth and workers in any of these countries in West Africa, because Sankara had an impact not only in Burkina Faso, but even in countries like Nigeria and Ghana. He was extremely popular for what he did just for 4 years back during the mid-1980s.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, this definitely, I mean, speaking to friends in Burkina Faso, this definitely is a Sankarist movement. The legacy of Thomas Sankara has always kind of been bubbling on the surface in that country, and we definitely saw it come to the fore with youth saying, like, I am a general in Sankara's army. This is what friends had been telling me, and this is very much the popular discourse of people who are taking to the street. And I mean, as you mentioned, this was a popular uprising. I had mentioned before Ballet Citoyen, a lot of young conscious youth who are artists, you know, are really kind of leading this movement, but then it has fallen into the hands of the military, that there hasn't been space made for a citizens' takeover of the parliament, for example, or that the benefits of the mining somehow get distributed to the people. So what would ideally then a successful revolution, a successful uprising look like from here if it wasn't the army that was going to kind of take control into mm-hmm. some sort of transitional government?
Yeah, it has to be civilian control. I'm sure there are elements within the lower ranks of the army who have more of an orientation towards the working class, towards anti-imperialism. But the upper levels of the military, the generals, the lieutenant colonels and so forth, fundamentally have the same class interests as the national bourgeoisie in Burkina Faso, which is allied with U.S. imperialism and French imperialism. So what's necessary is that there has to be a united front among these various Sankara's parties and other popular-oriented parties and socialist parties to come together and form some type of united front to actually confront the military in Burkina Faso and to take a clear position that they do not want to be allied with imperialism, whether it's from Washington or whether it's from France. That would be the ideal situation inside the country. And I just wanted to mention as well that throughout the region, there's been strikes, there's been rebellions that have been taking place just over the last several months. For example, in Ghana, which is to the south of Burkina Faso, they had a huge general strike among the public sector, particularly among the educational workers. There was also a strike in the oil industry. Ghana is an emerging oil-producing state, and there was a strike in the oil industry as well. The government in Ghana went to the courts and got an injunction to force the unions back on the job. But it shows the volatility of the working class and the youth throughout the region. In Nigeria right now, you have sectors of the healthcare workers that have embarked upon an indefinite strike. Right now, the oil workers and natural gas workers are also threatening to strike in Nigeria. So this is a regional phenomenon right now. In Niger, for example, the police who are being subjected to attacks from these Islamist guerrilla organizations, they went on strike. About several hundred of them, they were fired. And that struggle is still playing itself out as well. So we need to pay very close attention on what's going on in Niger, in Ghana, in Nigeria, as well as Burkina Faso right now, because it illustrates that the whole policy of relying on foreign investment growth, direct investment growth, is not a solution to African development. The resources from this foreign direct investment is not enhancing the infrastructure, the healthcare services. It's not creating a situation where there's quality education, the rights of women, the rights of youth in these countries. And it's being exposed on the ground. And as the commodity prices fall, as the world economy slows down, the world capitalist economy, we're going to see further unrest in these African states, in West Africa, and it's going to extend to other parts of Africa as well.
And, of course, a great way to stay up on what's going on with what is going on in Niger, in Ghana, and Burkina, as you mentioned, is to subscribe to the Pan-African Newswire. So if you could tell our listening audience how they might do that.
Okay, all they have to do is log on to the Pan-African Newswire website, and that's at panafricannews.blogspot.com. That's panafricannews.blogspot.com. And the readership of the Pan-African Newswire has escalated tremendously over the last several months. And it's quite interesting that, I get the statistics on the number of people who are reading the site and also the locations where people are reading the site from. Mm-hmm. And it's quite interesting. More and more people from Africa are reading the site. And interestingly enough, from Eastern Europe, from Ukraine, and also from Russia. There are more and more people reading because we've been covering developments in eastern Ukraine. Also in countries like Norway,
yeah.
There's an increased readership there as well. So it shows that people want alternative information on developments on the African continent. And, of course, that's a good thing because what we get largely from the Western media in North America is a pro-Pentagon, pro-CIA approach to African affairs and world affairs in general. And I'm also on Facebook under my name, Abayomi Azikwe.
Great, Abayomi, thank you so much for joining us yet again and bringing us, as you say, this alternative perspective on what's going on the continent, especially when it has to do with American foreign policy, which invariably, you know, the Americans are poking their nose around more and more now on the continent, especially through AFRICOM. So we need to keep on that tip. So thank you again for joining us, and we will be speaking to you soon.
And thank you so much, Ome. I think you're doing a great job with the program African Perspectives, and you need to keep that up because there's a dearth right now of media related to progressive and anti-imperialist issues impacting Africa. Mm-hmm. So please continue with your work over African Perspectives.
Great. Thank you so much, Abayomi. And of course, it takes people like you and us to be able to keep our, you know, our respective media houses going. So thank you again. And the collaborative work is really important to this kind of media. So
it most definitely is.
Yeah. Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye.
And that was Abayomi Azikwe, the editor of the Pan-African Newswire. You can check out the Pan-African Newswire. The address is panafricannews.blogspot.com. Sign up for the Newswire. He is always sending out great information, and he's keeping up to date for us on what's going on the continent. So that's a very, very useful